Hey, this is episode 130 of Sierra Nova Podcast.
That's a lot of episodes.
That's like perfect timing. If you had the Buttercat mug, that'd be cool.
I know. I gotta get the latte mug.
Yeah. Yeah. So we recorded an episode yesterday. Elvis Cardona. So,
but you guys don't know that because there's going to be a delay.
Exactly.
So it's actually like today we recorded this.
Yeah. This episode will be out the next Wednesday. So that'll be around the time that our guest, it'll be the day after our guest Kickstarter has launched because she's launching on the 15th. So pretty sure, unless if it changed, but. Anyway, yeah, so we have a few things, and then we'll invite her on. So we have Mittens. It's coming to the end of the Kickstarter.
Did it break it?
Did it break what?
Did it break 3,000?
Not at the moment, no.
You guys haven't watched our episode yet that hasn't been released? You son of a...
yeah, so... Hopefully it's broken by the time we get there because that's our like Pokemon parody trading card set thing. It's really cool. And then we're doing one other stretch goal, which probably won't be a lot after that. And that's like an ash can. And I already wrote that. I wrote that yesterday. So it's pretty cool.
What's the ash can?
What?
What's the ash can going to be?
It's like the Adventures of Mittens when he's in the Oath of the Litter. It's this little... gang thing that he's a part of.
Nice. By the way, the plushie, because speaking of the guests we're going to have today, right? That maybe yep. is that the same place that we're working to get the plushie through?
Yep. Yeah. Awesome. She was the reason why I got the plushie made.
Yeah. So that's just a little shout out for the guests that we're going to be having, which we're not going to say yet. But basically, yeah, that guest had a plushie last time that she was hugging like the entire time, which was fun.
She's and probably going to be hugging it again.
I hope she is. And
she literally is right now. So
yeah, so I was excited about that because when I found out we were doing the plushie for this one, that's the first thing I thought of. I'm like, oh yeah.
Do this. Some sad news is the Seer Chronicles 3 is most likely not happening this year. It's not going to be on Kickstarter because still being worked on. Hector is busy with a million other things, and
our comics are too long.
I've been slowly like paying him, and I just paid him for a good chunk. I have to pay a little more, and then he sent me a gift that says that motivates me. So I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, next year Seer Chronicles 3 will probably be on Kickstarter. We gotta figure out how that's gonna all work out because Ink 3 is also coming out, which we still have to edit, and Adam's gonna be working on that in like November, so hopefully it'll be out around the same time like this year. Yeah, so we got that going on. You can back Mittens by looking at the little link below or in the description, you know, when it's actually on YouTube. And you could check out Nova Nation by going to the link in the description or that little thing right there at SierraNovaComics.com/NovaNation sign up. It's got a lot of cool stuff on there. We have more comics on there. Took like a month or two for me to upload a couple new comics because gone through some stuff, but they're up there. And now there's another comic I got to upload that's from Triple Threat Comics. It's Codename Hunter 3. I think it's 3. So, yeah. So that's all we got going on right now.
I was just going to say, and the Nova Nation part of this episode will be in Nova Nation. So that's a whole... Yeah. You know,
that's the whole thing about
the behind scenes.
Yeah, there'll be some fancy questions that you can't see or listen to unless if you...
Yeah, we'll ask some really controversial questions like, does pineapple truly belong on pizza?
And it does, so...
Yeah. She's over there steaming mad.
No, it doesn't! And without further ado, here is our guest, Carissa Grant.
Hi!
Hey!
Hey!
And yes, here's my plushie. One of my plushie. I have tons of plushies. I don't think I had the other ones the first time I was on. Like this campaign has the skeleton bird. We have the zombie merman.
That looks awesome.
And our demon with the petticoat, which is in the banner back there. I love plushies. And our hellhound is done and will be. I try to do a new one for book one anyway, a new one each campaign. So this one, the new one is Skeleton Bird. And then in October 3rd, when we launch issue 7, we're going to have the Hellhound plushie. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Because, you're just doing Kickstarter after Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's very risky because I probably won't make as much because you're super close. I have very, very loyal fans, but none of them are rich. So unfortunately, they're very close together. My artist is very fast, but he's getting more work. So my wallet might be a little bit happier when it takes a little longer. But I love getting pages every day. So I have this mixed emotion about having to wait longer. So
yeah, it's like Christmas.
Right, every day. I mean, he sent me the black and white version for issue 7 yesterday at like 5:30 in the morning. So I was like, oh, this is awesome. So I was like reading through that. 7's my, I'm not supposed to have a favorite, but 7 is awesome. 7 is like double. I'm not charging more, but it's double. It's 38 pages of the story and all that. But that's October. So I guess I should probably talk about the one coming out this time.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
we'll get to that though. But yeah. he was making. I was thinking about. Oh, I just got like a huge echo. Is that on my end?
Yeah, maybe.
Hello. I don't know. Is it gone now? I think it's gone now. There we go.
It was
just for a moment. Anyways, no, I was just thinking about the plushies because I was watching a live stream with Gary Vee, and there's a company that I've been seeing these plushies everywhere, but I didn't realize that it was just one company making them. And there's a company called Squishmallows. Have you guys heard of them? They're like it's the plush animals. I'm sure you've seen them.
Oh, from a drawing.
It's just like a big plush, like it's a pillow version of a stuffed animal.
Like this.
No, like they're all like they look like eggs mostly. Like they're mostly like, not like eggs in the sense like it's just the shape. Like they're typically thin on the top, like a head, and they bulb down. Look them up later. They're incredible because they started in 2017 and then they sold to like Berkshire Hathaway after selling 300 million in the last like 5 or 6 years. So absolutely insane growth. But I was just thinking, you got so many of those. Are you pulling them up? Yeah, there you go. See, they all kind of they're adorable. And Gary V, he has this whole thing he has called V Friends, where he has these little characters he draws, and then he created NFTs initially with them. But he's been doing trading cards with them and all these like it's funny a lot of comic book stuff because he was a big fan of like collectibles as a kid. And those Squishmallows, it just made me think of that. You've got so many of those. Eventually, you'll have to get some licensing deal with them because it's like that's like the path to explosive growth.
Yeah. It would Anubis is the most popular. So I have been considering doing a commercial. These are all handmade, but I was considering next year doing commercially made so I could do a higher amount. And charge less. Obviously, these cost me a fortune to make. So that is the goal for at least Anubis. So we'll see. I love plushies and I have a lot of merch, as you know. I have more this time than the first time. I haven't been on since like what is it? Was I in January? It was a while, right?
Like February. Yeah.
I've only been doing this for like 8 months and it feels like 8 years. So
That's crazy. Like you've only been doing it for 8 months.
Yeah. I started this series making comics. I started Halloween of last year. So 1 year is this Halloween. This artist I started in January. So yeah,
that's nuts. Like that should motivate a bunch of people that are like, oh, should I do? It's like, yes, well, you should start getting.
Don't go by me. You'll go broke. I'm just obsessed. I am not the poster child for follow this person. This is what not to do is don't get into debt making comics. I had this this first thing when I was like, oh, I should make a comic book. I mean, how hard can it be? It's like the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I started my own business. So, it's a little tough. It's very satisfying though. And I gift wrap for some reason, don't ask me why, but I gift wrap all my Kickstarter rewards. And while I was gift wrapping them, which is funny because I hate gift wrapping, so I don't even know how that started. When I was gift wrapping, it just felt like so rewarding to like, you know, set these all up and do all these. And I get my Kickstarters out really fast, which I've been yelled at for because I'm too fast. I think I ordered them. I pay extra to get my issues in 6 days. And so I ended my campaign on a Monday at like four in the afternoon. And I shipped them out that Saturday. So,
Impressive.
So it was really fast. I didn't even get paid yet from, thank God for credit cards. But so I got paid
the credit card companies. Like, thank God for redemption.
Oh yeah. I'm like, so like they I think they have like celebrations in my honor every time I have a campaign and they're like, yeah. So, but yeah, every other month we've been launching a new one. This one, like you said, is August 15th and October 3rd. And then that's it for technically book one. So book two starts January 23rd. So it kind of, I gave everyone Christmas off. That's how nice I am. That they don't have to listen to me for a whole 2 months. But I am ordering a hardcover, for book one, which is issues 1 through 7, and it's 228 pages. And if that comes early, I might have that on like, front of my comic. But I'm like scared to tell anybody because I told everyone they would have the days off. So I will see. But I know people that want that like now, like they don't. I mean, like you, I'm like, you have all the issues already. Like, yeah, but it's hardcover. And I was like, yeah, that's true. I do kind of want to hold that in my hand, you know?
Yeah, that's got to be really cool to get a hardcover copy of any comic book, you know, but specifically your own. Like, that's got to be awesome.
Yeah, and the only problem is I have to buy 500 of them. So I was like, have these for a while. We'll see. Storing them, I'm sure, will be really fun. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Also, you just mentioned you have to have your comics on Fund My Comic. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I haven't tried it yet, but I wanted to try it for the hardcover because I like it. I think it's Fund My Comic. Yeah, Fund My Comic. I hate three things about Kickstarter. I hate that they don't take the funds out right away because everyone already thinks you do, because everyone's like, oh, I'll do it next week when I get paid. I'll do it in 2 weeks when I get paid. It's like, it doesn't come out. So that one. Two, they do not get addresses when they pledge. Like, when you pledge, put your freaking address down, because I still have one here, one from each campaign that somebody has not given you paid. So, but they have not given me the address. So it's been sitting here. Mm-hmm. And one of them is like $123. So I'm like, you've backed like 700 of them. So I know you know what you're doing, you know? and then the other thing is, I don't think you should be able to back out the last 24 hours. I think, I understand you want to have back out safety, fine, whatever. But the last 24 hours, when everyone's trying, when you're trying to get the fund over or whatever. I don't know if you know Randy, but Randy, someone backed out at 37 seconds. Like, really? And then you're on the air. Like, he was on the air. I'm like, I was scared to have a close that show because I was so embarrassed that I'm like ready to bid on myself if someone backed out because I didn't want it to like get lower on the screen.
Yeah. So, I definitely feel that because we've had that happen plenty of times where people like there was a couple times where there was somebody like who backed, they put like a large amount in and then they removed it. Like, and it's just like that can hurt. And it's like, if they do that before you've reached your goal and they're kind of like, they feel like maybe they're helping you reach your goal, but then you already reach it after you back out. Like I kind of get why someone might do that, but like they would do it. Like, we've already been funded. Now we're trying to hit milestones, and then people would back and then back out. It's like, just don't back it. It's okay.
my worst was, this was my best campaign. So I was expecting like fire when I was mailing things. But my first two major campaigns had very large non-payments. The first one was $400 from one person, did not pay. So they bought like every plushie there was, and then they never paid. And the last one, the one before, the one after that was $300, not paid. And both times there were one-of-a-kind items that couldn't be sold for the rest of the time. So not only did I not get that money, I couldn't sell it to anybody else. So this is the first time I had like a $15, that was it, $15, and they were regular. So I gave them the PDF for free, and they're going to buy the back issue in the next one. So it worked out. But I was so shocked because this one guy who I was so thankful for, never read my comic, spent $218 to buy every single back issue and variant there was. And I was like, I really hope you like this story. But I was like waiting for it to not to pay because it was like $218. And I was like, watch him not pay because that would be this, the, but he paid. And I was like, oh, I was like, what can I add to this to make, you know, make me feel better about him spending $218?
That's a good way to think about that though, too. Like, I feel like, you know, like I like kind of laugh about like someone backing out, but it's like that's ignoring the fact there's like 100 other people that backed it, right? So it's like,
yeah,
that's only one negative story, but the rest is, you know, incredible people backing. So yeah, well, you get somebody, you know, backing with $200, like that's awesome. Like that's so like, cool.
What? I even said, I was like, you want keychains? I got stickers. I got, he's like, yeah, sure. I just threw everything in there. But it's so funny because I can spend $5 somewhere and be like, or hand it to somebody that needed it and never think twice. But if a $5 person backs out, I'm like, really? Like, I'm just like, it's the principle of the thing.
Yeah. It was like last week, we had a guy that, backed a dollar. And then the next day backed out. I was like, what was the purpose of that?
I have this one person, or I don't know if it's a person or obviously it's somebody, but I don't know if it's a group or something. They back $10, no reward every time. And it pays, but like,
oh, is it the backer kit?
No, that's a
dollar. No, that's a dollar. Backer kit's $1, I think, is $1.
Yeah.
This is like, I don't know, it was like a... starts with an A, but like, I don't know them. I've never heard of them. I love them, but I mean, they just $10 every time. I'm just like, you could have got a whole issue or the PDFs or something. I mean, I don't know. It's weird. But now that I said it, they won't do it this time. But yeah, it was just weird, but it's every time. And then I had one guy pledge 50 out of nowhere. And not only did it did go, the payment went through, and then he didn't get a reward. It's $50. He got the credit card to revoke it. So like I had to wait like a month and then pay it back. Yeah. It was like really weird. I don't know if he claimed somebody stole his card or I don't know. I'm sure someone stole your card and backed mine for $50. Yeah, for fun.
That's kind of weird that like there, like I don't even understand. Like that should be something that Kickstarter would be responsible for. Cause you know what's so funny? I laugh about the credit card thing. Like, every single credit card, on the back of the credit card, it tells vendors they are not allowed to accept this card unless it's shown with a photo ID that has a matching signature. So the person who accepts the payment, meaning Kickstarter, should be the one that's responsible for that. Just like, you know, like it's, that's why like when someone steals a credit card and they spend it, it's like the credit card company, that's why they can ask the vendor to get the money back, because it's their responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Right. If they want to be faster about it, that's fine. But that doesn't go on the consumer. Like the whole point is, you want my money faster, then you take on the responsibility.
I just don't understand why they don't take the funds out right away anyway, because you could still refund it like a regular. If someone backs out,
I think the reason why is because they'd have to be considered a bank and hold it in escrow. And so like by doing it that way, it's like they would probably have to have different business licensing to do that. Like that's like a big deal where I have a client who's in like the food tech space, like Grubhub style. And essentially the way that they have to have a bank account, it has to be a bank account that is aware that money's coming in for only a moment and then leaving. But the fact that it stays there even for a moment, they need a specialized bank to use it. Do you remember that the Silicon Valley Bank that collapsed? Oh. That was one of the few banks that allowed people to do that. That's why everyone banked with them. That were
Indigo,
like,
does it? Huh? They take it right away. Indigo, yeah, does it. They take it out right away.
Indiegogo.
But Indiegogo. I wonder. But yeah, so I'm wondering though, is that because Indiegogo pays out no matter what, where Kickstarter doesn't, right? So if Kickstarter took your money and then they had to give it back, they would be holding on to it and returning it. And I think that, like, that's what I mean. Like, that might be the issue. Is that
I'm fine with no refunds. My whole campaign would be so much less stressful because, I mean, that thing's up. I'm one of those idiots that have it up 24/7. Like, I am staring at this thing like a freaking loser. But there's nothing to be like excited about. Like, everyone's like, oh, you're already up to so and so. Like, what's the difference? They get back at it anytime. Like,
you know what I wish? Like, yeah, you can hook up like Google Analytics to it. Like, you can like set up stuff like that.
There's analytics that you can do now.
Yeah, like they have a lot of stuff, but one thing I wish they had was real-time viewers so that if you're addicted to looking at it all the time, you can see if people are coming and seeing it, because I feel like that's a missed opportunity for the reason why everyone uses Kickstarter is it's kind of like the reason why you run Facebook ads and not really Twitter ads, right? It's the idea that there's more people on Facebook. And so there's more like the likelihood that you make additional sales because people accidentally find it are so much greater on Kickstarter than on Indiegogo, right? Like, yeah, it's not even close. And it's a really big deal. Like, I have a friend who runs live events and we use Eventbrite, but they charge like huge fees to take it. But then he'll try to sell his own tickets, but Eventbrite will still sell more because you get accidental traffic. Right. And so that's the reason why people like reluctantly kind of use Kickstarter. But knowing that, it's like, OK, well, then how could Kickstarter make it better? And it's like if they had this ability to like in real time go, oh, my God, 100 people came here and no one backed. Maybe I should change my video. Maybe I should change my copy. Maybe I should do something, because that's too many people to look here and then not be excited. And then there's something called bounce rate, like for your website. Like if someone comes and leaves within like a 10-second time frame, it's considered a bounce. And if you've got really good. That would be so helpful to know. Like if there's a 90% bounce rate, that means that your picture isn't good enough because they're bouncing before they even read anything, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I don't even understand, like, their analytics goes away when your campaign ends. Like, I want to see, like, right? You can't, I'm like, why would you, like, I tried to see it the last second before it ended, but I was like, I want to know, and it's not instantaneous. Like, if I have someone back it, it takes a while to, like, so even if I saw it at the last end, it wouldn't be. Like, I know mine was, like, 64% from the last campaign did this campaign, but then, like, more people pledged at the last minute. So I'm like, well, how many actually came from, you know, so I really am curious. I know.
I just thought of like an amazing thing I'm gonna have to do now. So first off, do you know what ChatGPT is?
Yes.
So I use that.
Our future overlords.
I use it every single day. I make money with it. The thing's incredible. I've used it to make a small program on my website where you can enter your website and then a couple different tags, and it'll make a URL for you that's trackable by Google Analytics, right? And it'll tell you like it's from this source or this content, right? And I just realized what I could do is, Gianna, you can download that Excel sheet at the end. Mm-hmm. So there's tons of information in there, but it's too much. I might try to figure out if I can write up a program.
Maybe I don't know that. I don't think I've done this. I've done like the Excel for the backer. But I don't think I've done this. There's a data sheet you can back. You can.
Well, no, it's for the backers, but it just has a ton of information on them, right? Okay. And so what you could do is if you could take all of that and put it in a program, you could figure out who's the repeat backers and how much they backed by. Because one thing that you can do with, like, say, Facebook ads is you can actually you can just upload an email list and it'll try to find people. But the other thing you can do is you can do an email list with how much they spent on your site. And then you can find the most valuable ones, right? And then because of that, you can target them better. But in this case, if you have email, you can literally figure out who's your number one backers over a period of time. Because maybe they're only $25 every time, but they're every single time. And you're like, this person's giving me $500. Like, I should reach out to them personally, right? And then you find out they have a comic book store or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, you're like, oh, this is exciting.
My biggest fan is my mom. She doesn't read them, so... her review is going in the back of my hardcover. It said, I finally read your story, and besides all the F words, it's pretty good. Love, Mom. So, that's my review. So, very accurate.
Yeah. My mom said something like that when she read one of my superhero comics. She's like, do they swear in superhero stuff? I was like, yeah. It's not just me. I'm not the only one.
Yeah. No. So, But yeah, no, that's a great program because I would love to get all that data. I mean, I could see where things are coming, but I don't know, like, it'll say you got this many backers from Twitter, but it's not telling me if it was a paid Twitter ad or like a link that I did.
That's what I mean. So I'll send it to you after the show. I have a link on my website that literally you can fill it in and then you can track it later because that is one of the things. It's like, and you can also do it like in Kickstarter. You can make like referral links, right? You can make custom ones. And I recommend people do that because you can be more specific and say like, you know, Twitter ad, Twitter post. And then like, I've actually done this too. So whenever I share, because Greg's the one that does the primary marketing for ours, because he's the one that's like basically everyone I know in the comic space, he knows. So I'm not like, I don't have any extra.
That's just how he gets out of doing work. You're so good, Greg. You do a job.
No, because like I've tested it though, where I'll make a custom link for myself and I'll share it. And I think maybe one time a backer went through my link. So like, I know that like me sharing it on my personal feed doesn't get any extra because
so I can make a unique link that I use for Twitter ads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, so I definitely recommend that because like that's something that if you're running ads, like I would highly recommend that. And then the UTM thing I mentioned earlier is just great because it'll tell you like campaign. I can't remember how much data Google Analytics gets from Kickstarter, but it does get some data. And if it can track the source that it comes from, that would be like so valuable. It's just been a while since I've looked at it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's tricky because I always make the point to say, so I have a lot of searches. I always say the easiest way to find my Kickstarter is to search Worthy Chaos because I'm the only thing that pops up. So the search is the greatest thing so that no one has to look for a link. But now I don't know if it comes from what shows or what I do. So yeah, I kind of like that link idea to do. To find out.
That's the other thing too. If you're going to be like, let's say you go to a convention, get that custom link and then put it in a QR code generator. And then if they scan it there, then you know they came from there. So like, that's what I actually did that for our, what's it called? I printed a,
for our banner.
Our banner. It's like a scroll, like a retractable banner for our conventions. And I stupidly put a QR code on there from a company that tricked me because I didn't realize that if I don't pay them, it won't stay active.
I have a QR code and it's free.
Yeah, I know there's free ones. I just happened to accidentally use one that was paid. I didn't know that until literally I scanned it at the convention. I had to pay $120 to activate it. I'm like, it costs as much as the sign. I was like, oh my God.
Somebody told me about that QR code and I love it because I had never used them before. But once I put on the card, because especially since I've Kickstarted so fast, I just like today, I actually updated to the new Kickstarter. So I don't have to get a new QR code. I keep updating it. So that was the best thing that I had done.
You have a QR code that you can update?
Yeah, so I have a little wherever my thing is. It's like on a business card. I have it somewhere. But so let's say this is my business card. It's always on the back, and all they do is scan it. It goes to and all the links of mine come up, and I have my Facebook, my Twitter, my website, and you can add as many as you want. And then I have my Facebook group, my Kickstarter, and my TikTok. And I can update or change them anytime I want just by going to their website. So I went to the website this morning for free. Oh, yeah. I don't pay. I never paid for the code. I never paid to use the website. I never paid for anything.
Bit.ly or something?
No, Bit.ly's paid for now.
Oh, is it?
I think it's a
tiny URL.
That's another one I use for free because I couldn't figure out how to make my Kickstarter links shorter. And so this way I can memorize that it's Worthy. I wish it was Worthy Chaos, whatever number it is, but I was like, well, whatever, I'll catch up eventually.
Kickstarter used to have a way to make them short automatically.
Oh, they still do.
But it's like harder.
It's embedded or something, right? But this one, I don't have to keep going and paste and copy. I can just write in that it's tiny URL, Worthy Chaos 4 or whatever. But yeah, I think the code, I think it was literally like koji.com, like KO. I could double check afterwards because it's automatically. I don't think it's here. Hold on, let me see if it's here. No, it's not here. I can look upstairs because I couldn't do it on my phone because I couldn't remember what the website was, but it was upstairs. But I think it's like the code koji.com something, like some kind of Koji code, whatever. But yeah, it's an awesome site. And if someone signs up through it, they give me a notice that someone signed up through it. And I like that I can just update it constantly and not worry about my, you know, Kickstarter. Because I have my own business. And every time I change something, I had to get a new freaking card. So
is it QRFY?
No, it starts with a K.
Generate your free news. Oh, K-O-J. I help with Koji. I think I just found it. Is this it? Help center? No.
If not, I can go upstairs and find it in like 2 minutes. You could just sing and dance until I come back. It's all good.
No, I think I found it. I think it's KOJI. I think I just found it. I'm like just trying to get the.
That sounds familiar. But yeah, you signed up and you make a profile. So when someone scans it, a little.
Yeah, link free digital storefront. I just found it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm saving that for later because that's super helpful. Because like I said, I'm literally what I'm going to have to do for our banner is like, because I don't want to keep paying that every year. I'm going to have to print a thing and like stick it to our banner.
I was just saying, just print a sticker. Yeah. I was like, don't reprint the banner. Like I have two banners, but I hate cons. So I just keep them in the background. So
yeah,
I signed up for 10 cons before my comic book was even out. Cause you had to do it. And now I hate them all. Like I hate them. I love meeting the people, but I hate calling them over. I hate like trying to talk over everyone else because it's so loud. And
you should see if you can find like a family member or a friend that does like to talk. Because like for me and Greg, it's great because Greg can sit there, you know, look gorgeous, and I'll just be over here, you know, selling people, right? Yeah, like, he's sitting over there, you know, just going, yeah, this stuff's cool. But like, because that is the hard part is getting them to come over. But like. Definitely, like I love conventions from the buyer perspective. Like you know, walking around.
Oh, I love being at them. I hate having a table at them.
We went to our first one where we were tabled. It was like a very 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 small one, like small like whatever you just pictured, smaller than that, right? And so, and basically, it was still very cool though, like meeting people and like there was like maybe 13. No.
Yeah, it was like 16 people.
Really?
Like 15 to 20 people, and we ended up still selling like a few comics, which was awesome.
See, here's the thing: I actually do better at the smaller ones because the bigger ones are there to see people. Like I did Lexington, which is 4 days, and I barely made $100, and it cost me like $600 with the table and the hotel and everything. But it's just too loud; no one could hear me, and I'm an Italian New Yorker. That is saying something that they could not hear me. And I've never had anyone in my life say "speak up," so I don't. You know, that kind of sucked.
When they said it, did you have to like control alt delete restart? Like you're like, what's happening? Like,
it was very frustrating. So I didn't like that one, but I did a very small local one, and I made it was a really cheap table, but I made like four times what I paid for the table, and I didn't need a hotel because it was local. Nashville was my best one. I made $350.
Oh, yeah. Greg, I was looking at your bio to like come up with questions today, although we haven't asked any of those questions because we're having a great conversation. No, we're doing good. But I live in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm in what's it called? Green Hills.
Nice.
And actually, well, technically I'm at 12 South. Right now I'm in Green Hills. So I didn't know that you were in Nashville.
Yeah. So the Nashville Con, did you go to the Nashville Con? Because I was there.
We were supposed to go, but then Greg had to have a family member die.
We just blame Greg for everything, both positive and negative.
Greg selfishly had a family member die, so I'm like, oh, that's great. I'm like,
you know,
I guess we can't do this.
Some people,
now.
I swear, they're so selfish. My best con. I made $350, but the fun part, I mean, that was pretty fun, but the best part was, I would say all but two people bought. I only bring three because I'm lazy. So everyone bought all three except for like two people. Like, and they just bought like issue ones, but everyone else bought the entire set, the one, two, three. That's I have six in hand, but I refuse to carry them all over the place.
Oh yeah. Even for that small one that we did, we ended up bringing everything, and it was, I still want to do that every time. Cause it was awesome because we had like this huge 8 foot long table because we brought a 6 foot one, but they're like, oh yeah. Like, do you have a table? If not, we got this one. I'm like, how long is that? They're like 8 feet. I'm like, yeah, I want that one.
Nashville was huge. Like, I don't know if that was the table it was supposed to be, but we all had really not only long tables, they were super wide. Like that's it awesome. Could have been six, but it was great. It was the best. Like I actually had room to put everything because I have like hoodies and stuff, and I have plushies and statues and prints galore. But I mean, the thing that was nice about it was big enough to have like they had just enough amount of stars that people came, but like it was only two big rooms. So, like you just go through and then you go through again. Every day, Friday through Sunday, it was only 2 days. So all day Saturday and all day Sunday, we sold. You know, actually, I lied. Every time I left the table to look around, someone came. Like it would be like, no, I don't know why. I think my husband got this from King of Queens, but he goes, I'll text you a secret code or whatever. And it was kettle corn. I was like, first of all, that's two words, so it's not a code word. And two, no one can see what you're texting me. But I'll be like talking to an artist, and you'd see kettle corn go across the screen. I was like, really? So it'll be like no one will come for 20 minutes. I would leave to go look at something. And then, of course, somebody came. But it was a really nice con. And I would definitely do that one again. Fanboy in Knoxville was large, but they really went to go. Like, I even went to go see Sean Astin. But the wait was like 3 hours. So I was like, yeah. I was like, I can't deal with that for 3 hours. But yeah. So I didn't, and then the worst part about that one was there was no internet at all. So I couldn't do any credit card transitions. I couldn't do, I couldn't even text out. Like it was just, I didn't even go Sunday. I was like, I give up.
Was there supposed to be, and it just, there was an outage? Because like that's insane for like a large con.
There's supposed to be free internet that we hooked up to, and it just, I don't know if it's because I was in the back of the room, but we didn't get, but it was only Saturday. At the busiest day, like so, I don't know if it's because everyone was there. Because Friday, I could get internet. I was able to do transactions.
Oh, it might have just been like their servers were overwhelmed. Like, do you ever have full 5 bar service in a big city, and for whatever reason, you can't make a phone call? Like, it's just like there's so many signals that it can't. large servers.
The only thing that was nice about that was I met the guy that I can't think of his name now because I've never called him by his real name, but the guy that was in Buffy as the principal and then as Deep Space Nine. And so we talked to him and I got his autograph. And then completely off the topic, I have a really large, it's a good thing these banners cover it. I have an incredibly large Donald Duck collection that I've been collecting for 8 years. I have more than the world record. Like I have 4,000 and the world record's 2,800. So the guy that did Donald Duck's voice.
Wait. We're just going to skip past that real quick. One second. You 4,000 Donald Duck memorabilia?
Over 4,000. 4,000 recorded, but I have more than that.
Like, real quick. After you finish the redemption arc, I just realized that's a really cool way to say that. once you finish the redemption arc, you should absolutely try to submit to be that world record winner to gain publicity to then get that moment to share your comic. That's crazy.
Just overpowers my laziness that I have not done it yet. I could do that. I actually talked to the person that has the world record in Denmark, and I said, would you mind if I went for the world record? He's like, nope, I already got my plaque. And I was like, all right.
Was it Guinness, like a Guinness Book of World Records? Guinness
Book of World Records, yeah.
Yeah. That I would absolutely do that because like, if honestly, like if I had like something like that, that I could use as like, cause it's, I think the term is like a hoax in the sense when you normally like fake it, but the whole idea is to draw attention for something like seemingly irrelevant. And then it's like, you've got that moment in the spotlight and they're like, wow. Like, you know, you've got this huge collection, you know, it's like, oh, I've loved all this stuff so much. I even created my own comic books. Yeah. I mean, like, it's just like, it's a brief moment. That you could potentially get a ridiculous amount.
Now I'll have to do this. And the Donald Duck patent is up in like 3 years. So if they don't renew it, like I don't think they're renewing Mickey Mouse. I could probably put Donald Duck in my comic. I have them in sections. So like I have everything in this room pretty much and upstairs. I have 708 just Donald as a cowboy. So they're very hard to find Donald because I've been buying them left and right. So the guy that does
hard to find there, I have all of them.
Well, I'm missing two and I'm really mad. This is really a tangent. I'm mad because my alarm didn't go off to do the eBay thing and it was $50 and it was like 85 years old, and I wanted it so bad, and I missed it. And it took my friend forever to find it, and now I'm going to curse about it until I find it. So there was the voice guy was there, and he actually, I didn't know he actually also illustrates it. So I had him illustrate Donald Duck with a cowboy hat.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, and it took him like 3 tries. It was $60. Like, I was like, can you do a cowboy hat? And he's like, if you have a picture. And first I was like, shit, I have no internet. But then since I have 707 pictures, I was like, I'll find one. So I gave him one of those to take a picture off my phone. And it took him 2 tries because he was like on an autopilot. He's like, I keep drawing the damn hat. I was like, I'll just go over there and you let me know when you're done. But yeah, I love it. So it's in my collection now. And I found one thing. My friend found me something yesterday. But I have everything. I have boxers with them. I have coins and from all Japan, from every country. I have all these things. I have a globe. And I have
wait, you have a Donald Duck globe?
It's yeah, it's Donald Duck, and each county, country, I don't know what if it's state, yeah. Country, whatever, it has whatever he's dressed up as, whatever that country's thing is. So I have, and state, so it's state and country. So I have him both as Donald, but also as a cowboy in Texas. So I have two, it counts as two. And I don't have any repeats, by the way, which upsets my friend because she searches. I swear that's her whole life, is searching my Donald Duck cowboys like nonstop. And she gets mad because I won't get double pictures. So like the 707 Donalds as a cowboy are all different Donalds.
That's awesome.
I've bought things in different languages that I have no idea what I said or committed my life to, like just to get this thing. I know I've signed my life away somewhere. But Denmark, Japan, Germany, languages I didn't know existed. I bought these Donald as a cowboy. So yeah, I have a huge, huge collection. And my friend found a new one yesterday that I just ordered. It's a print of Donald as a cowboy. So I'm waiting for that. And then there was a pin. I have pins that only have 100 in the world made. And I have 48, but not all of them are Donald cowboy. And I've been searching 8 years for this one. There's 250 made in the world, and I've been searching 8 years for it, and my friend just found it 2 weeks ago, and I was like, well, now my life's complete. I don't know what to look for. So, but yeah, so I have a large collection. So,
wow.
Just yeah, but now I have to do it. You know, I've been so lazy with doing it, and now I have
like,
to go.
But like that's now it's got a really good reason. Like I said, like it's such a perfect opportunity. Like I would do it like right after, like I would start getting it.
Well, I should have paid for this interview here. Like I'm getting all this information that I probably should have paid for. You should have had a price on it. Now I'm got it for free. But yeah, I'll have to count all of them. And this whole room, there's like 4 bookshelves. There's few of them that I know exactly how many I have. Like I know I have 707 of the cowboys because I have every single picture. I take it when I go and it's in the album. I have 615 just the pins because I have a website that controls all your pins. So I know certain things, but now I gotta go count all this shit I have.
Your payment is we take all your Donald Duck stuff.
Yeah. my husband's gonna open a museum when I die. I was like, there's something for me to look forward to.
That actually would be really cool, like to have a Donald Duck museum, because like that's like they got Mickey Mouse ones, like you know, but yeah, like that, screw Mickey. That's nuts.
Actually,
I just realized that they would.
I was gonna say there's more Donald Duck has been in more shorts and movies than Mickey's ever been.
Yeah, I was gonna say the interesting thing. It's like if that other person has the largest record, that means there's no museum that has the largest record. Which means if you're beating that other large record, you have more than any Donald Duck museum has.
Woohoo! And his stuff's not as cool as mine. Not to say anything wrong about him, but he has like, you know, like little figures or modern stuff. I have stuff that's from like 1938. Like I have collectibles and antiques, and I didn't go the easy route. So I went the most expensive route I could have went, like an idiot.
You got salt shakers, salt and pepper shakers?
I do. I have a little car made out of ceramic porcelain. I think it's porcelain. It's a little car, red car. And the nephews and him are the salt and pepper shaker inside it. So
that's Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Name it, and I probably have something with it. My husband hates the boxers because they were from, like, I don't know, the 50s or so. He's like, they must have been worn. I was like, they're in behind glass. I'm not playing with them or hugging them. But, yeah, I have boxers that are probably used.
The only Donald Duck thing I have is a pillowcase where on the front side of it, it's him sleeping on a pillow with an alarm clock. And if you flip it, it's him freaking out as the alarm clock goes off. And yeah, I have a Mickey Mouse.
That's my husband when he wakes up.
That's awesome. And then I got the Mickey Mouse equivalent, but on the flip side of his, he's just like, oh, like nice and relaxed.
Yeah. You know, it's a funny story because not only is, so Donald Duck was created because Mickey used to be mean and he became an icon for kids. So they had to make a counterpart and turn him into a wuss. So they created Donald Duck to be his counter angry part. Oh. And now everyone loves him more. And screw Mickey and his squeaky voice. But Donald was invented. Now the patent just ended on black and white Mickey only. So anyone out there that can use Mickey Mouse. But Donald Duck was never in black and white that I know of. He was in 1938. He was invented. So what I got.
He was great in color, years.
Yeah. So once he's I'm gonna put him in my comic book like Kingdom Hearts.
You're gonna do that.
Like Kingdom Hearts, man. I'm just gonna have him up there.
Oh yeah. Well, oh my god, that's awesome.
Speaking of Kingdom Hearts, there's another video game that inspired you to do this comic series. Resident Evil 2.
Good segue. See, Greg goes really good. Resident Evil 2 is the infamous game that got me to buy the PlayStation 1 and to write the story. So yeah, all because of an alligator or crocodile. I don't even know what it is. Depending, you Google it and it's either a crocodile or an alligator, but I'm almost positive it's supposed to be a crocodile. But I saw the crocodile go after Leon for what, 4 seconds on a commercial? And I was like, I need a PlayStation 1. Like, I'm pretty sure there's some kind of hypnotic thing in that. That was subliminal to my lower intelligence brain that was like, oh, buy Resident Evil 2. So I went out, rented the game, and no instructions whatsoever. Leon walks into the fire nonstop, throw the controller, ready to give up. My brother comes in, who's been playing Zelda since he could walk, and he's playing it. I get mad, kick him out, and I played it nonstop. And then I went out and bought it, and I was mad because it's an auto-aim, and I was like, what the hell? After I played that game, I learned about, a couple of years later, I learned about role-playing online. And I role-played as Claire Redfield for 15 years. And Wesker, too, but nobody ever knows that, so don't tell anyone. So. I was completely ruthless. If anyone knew that I was Wesker back 15 years ago, they would probably, like, arrest me. Like, he was awful. He was, like, the worst. That's why my villains are probably so evil in this one. So the story is a little bit unique in the fact that, and I don't remember if we talked about this last time, I probably should have. I did mention, I believe, that I had a co-writer. What I didn't mention was, so I write the story and I write everything Serafina, but everything Draven is written by my co-writer. So like any speech you're reading, thoughts or anything, that's all my co-writer. So when you're reading them and you're like, oh, these are like two different people. I'm not that good. That is literally two different people.
That's really clever.
Yeah. And it's so funny because the characters are, of course, like us. So like Serafina talks way more than she thinks, and that would be me. And then Draven, he thinks way more than he talks. You know, my co-writer. So then you have the unique personalities that, you know, you're reading it and you're like, oh, they seem like, you know, really cool things. The other one, which you probably already knew this, I already have 45 issues written for the story. So series one is already written. It's 50 issues in total, I believe. And that's for just this series. And then the spinoff also has 45 issues already written. So we pretty much have over 100 issues written for the story.
When it comes to, you were saying, like, because you're both writing, like, do you go back and forth writing, or do you kind of write out the story and then write your parts, and then basically he writes his parts? Is that kind of the idea? Like,
yeah, so I write my part and then I send it off, and then they write the point of view of that entire thing that I wrote in Draven's eyes. So like when I'm writing mine, my character will talk to Draven, but of course I won't get an answer yet, so I don't know what he'll say. I can kind of know because I've been doing this a long time. We just passed 1 million words like 2 weeks ago just in this story. But so I will talk to Draven several times throughout this one chapter. We'll say chapter, and then Draven will answer and that reply back to my character. And while you're doing it, you can hear I'll get his thoughts, his reactions. Like if she gets hurt, I get to hear what he's thinking. I get to see or read, you know, the struggle he's thinking and doing and all that stuff. So it's pretty much one chapter written in two people's point of view. So when you read like a novel, usually it's in one person's point of view. Sometimes it skips through the characters, you know, like you'll, especially the, I don't know if you ever read the Resident Evil novel, but you'll see each character is like, it's separated by, you know, a space or something. So it's kind of like that, but you go back and get the same one. So you could technically read only my replies and know what's going on and know the story and everything, but you get the complete picture when you read them both. And it was that reason that we didn't release it as a novel, because we do have 11 books written. And the average novel is 70 to 90,000 words. As ours, our average is 90 to 130,000 words each. So ours are longer than an average novel. And this series one, Redemption, is 5 novels, and they're broken up into arcs. So the first book is 7 issues. So this campaign is issue 6. They're fighting our clotters. Did I have clotters last time? I don't think I did. Our vampires are subspecies. So no one yells at me. It's not a vampire. Our subspecies of vampire is called clotters. And
I do remember that.
Yeah. So you have clotters, and their blood's really thick, and they can only feed from humans, or they start to deteriorate like a zombie. And they can't feed from animals or bags or nothing, because it's such thick blood, it gives them strength and all that stuff. Also, they're more ruthless than regular vampires because they have their conscience. So when a vampire's first turned, or clotters first turned, they would have to feed on a human directly to survive. So a lot of them don't have that consciousness, and they wind up like deteriorating. So they wound up to save the species, they would change only sociopaths and murderers and all these ruthless people. So you have like the most ruthless subspecies of vampires there are. And to top it off, because that wasn't enough, if they bite you or or taste your blood, they can track you anywhere you go like a homing beacon. And they could all do it like a hive mind in the family. So if you kill one of them out of revenge, they will track you down. And since you don't have to invite them in, garlic doesn't bother them, and they can go out in the sunlight, though they rarely do. They could. They had issue 6 is them going to track them down, because she, of course, killed one in the last one. And now she has to find them all before they track her down. So that's what's happening. Issue 6, they're going after the clotters. So issues 1 through 7 are in Helltown, where it's merged with Hell. It's kind of like Silent Hill. They're trapped there with hellhounds, zombie mermen, zombies, ghosts, and Anubis, clotters, like everything you could possibly think of. And then at the end of 7, they go into the next book. So they do all continue, but they're just kind of like different environments. So like at the end of 7, they go into the Haunted Asylum, where now they're trapped. Like, it's kind of like Resident Evil 1 and 2 put together. You have the giant salamanders on the ceiling, which are like the lickers. You have zombies, you have ghosts, and they have to get through this trap. They're trapped inside of it, so they have to find their way out. And then in book, that's 7 issues. And then book 3, they go into Resident Evil 3, which is the zombie-infested city. Now, it's not what they think it is, and it's not what you think it is, and you won't know that till the end, but it looks like a zombie-infested city where they're trapped with 2 other survivors. And I went a little crazy because it was Resident Evil, Resident Evil 2 and book 3. So there's 10 issues because I just kept writing. And then after that, at the end of that, they go on to an island, which is like Code Veronica, only better, because that game sucked. But it's Code Veronica, and they're trapped with all these escaped monsters, and they go to hell and heaven and everything. So each book, so together it's about 50 issues. So my artist got mad when I said, I really wish you could do the spinoff. And he's like, why can't I do the spinoff? I was like, cause this is gonna take you like 7 years. Like, this is like, even if you do 7 issues a year, which is the goal, if you did 7 issues a year, that's 7 years to do 50. So I'm sure it'll take like 7 years, but hey, we can wait if we have to, but I already started series two. So series 2 is 5 issues in. So in 7 years, it's gonna be like series 3. I'll have to catch up, so. I told him he's welcome to clone himself if he wants to do more, and I will gladly pay him. I was like, keep working. I mean, cloning is supposed to be good now, right? Isn't that new up there?
But, nice.
Yeah. So I don't have enough going on. I have to print these nonstop. So, but I don't start a campaign until they're in hand. It's like I already have issue 6. 7 just got the black and white version. So when that's colored, I'm going to order those. And the hardcover is the tricky one. So I have to order 500 of them. It takes about month and a half. So I'm not sure if that campaign, I have it set for January 23rd. But if not, I'll just do issue, you know, 8. And then if I get it early, I'm going to try fund my comic and see how that works. Cause we went on a huge tangent with the whole point of saying fund my comics was that they take the money out right away. And, you know, they can't, I don't think they can back out or it's an option. They have to contact you to back out, which of course I'd probably let somebody if they want to back out, but it makes it more work and probably more embarrassing. Cause you're like, can I back out? So it's a little bit you know, more exhausting. But you get the funds right away and you don't even have to wait till the end of the campaign. You get the funds, as you go. So, I'm looking forward to that. So we're going to try it and see how it works. Mostly I have to stick to Kickstarter because I set up all my clients for my business. I made all their pages. I can't make them make another page. So either way, I'll probably always have a Kickstarter and then we'll just do fund my comic or, you know, in between. Cause why not have torture yourself all year round? Why take breaks? You know?
by the way, cause I was like looking through like all your bio stuff. And you mentioned you have dyslexia.
Yeah, I have. So I didn't know it because until I was an adult, I'm considered an adult. I didn't say till I'm mature, till I was adult.
Until the government recognized me.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't realize it until the government recognizes it. And so there are a lot of different people always think, oh, you see letters screwed up and it looks weird. And I didn't have that. I had everything else. Like there's like, let me see. I took the test and if you get 10, you're considered dyslexic and I got 38. So apparently I'm pretty dyslexic. Like verbally is the worst, which I guess is good and bad. I mean, I guess, but like, I always have to have subtitles on because I don't always get what they say. When I'm writing, I used to have to dumb down my own writing, which, I have I know these really huge words in my head. Like I know what they mean. I don't know where I learned them, but I know what they mean. But I could never spell them. And my parents bought me this little spell checker, you know, in the '90s, did not get the word I was trying to find. So it was not helpful. So I had to use the thesaurus in my head and dumb down my own writing. So now I don't have to do that. Of course, no one sees it because they only see the speech that I write. But there's good words in there, I promise. I can now like dumb down it and then look at, you know, Google it to get the better words that I was looking for. If I can pronounce it, which rarely happens, my phone will find it for me. For those days when I can't do a normal word that most people can do, and I've been using like my entire life every day for 24 hours, I still couldn't spell it. But yeah, it could be, it can be really bad. I have, apparently my co-writer doesn't mind. I rarely edit my work. So, my co-writer's the same.
It's like, do you use Grammarly on an iPhone with autocorrect and spell check while using ChatGPT to like, be like, please summarize.
Yeah, I haven't used ChatGPT yet or whatever the letters are because they asked for my phone number and I didn't want our overlords to get it just yet, which it probably already has it. But I have not used it yet. It was tempting though, to be like, write a summary for my own story that I can't even write, like make my story sound better.
Honestly, the summary thing is really cool too, because like, honestly, like that's not, it's literally your content, you feed it. And so when you ask for a summary, it's not like it's taking it from somewhere else, but no, the reason why I actually was kind of joking about the ChatGPT thing is, one of my clients, for marketing stuff, he actually is dyslexic and he teaches people how to overcome their dyslexia in a way that's completely new, because it basically yielded a study on like a brain scan, and they figured out how a dyslexic brain actually functions. And even like some top tier dyslexic schools that are like, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a semester, even they still use like old methods to like override it. And basically his new method, anyone can learn it kind of thing. So he's like going around teaching it to like other teachers. Awesome. But basically he and I have been working together for a while and I need him to like do certain things for the company. I can't, because it comes from like his ideas and he can't translate it well enough. And then ChatGPT came out. I showed it to him one day and he is like, he feels like he has superpowers now, because basically kind of like what you were describing, like your brain will get stuck on something. You just can't quite get through it. And then he can basically spit out that nonsense into ChatGPT and it'll give him something back. So like, he basically like, he went from incapable of writing a blog article to now he's got like dozens of them. He one of the things I had him do to try to get more what's it called, content just on the internet so he might accidentally get found, is there's tons of people that ask questions on Quora, right? You know what Quora is? Yep. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, there's tons of people that ask questions about dyslexia on there. You could just go in there and answer him. He went from answering one every 2 weeks to 300 in the last month.
Damn.
Yeah. Wow. Like, you know, so like he, like I said, he went into turbo mode, and like the only reason he's not answering more is because he's also doing other stuff now too with it.
Yeah. I knew about the thinking weird, because this is going to sound really stupid. I have a book that said dyslexia is how their brain works, and it's, I've had it for 20 years. I've never read it. So I was hoping to learn it through osmosis, but there is a book that says the dyslexic brain, it works differently. I think it has different logic because no one else seems to follow my logic. So
what it is, and ironically, you kind of hit on it with the thesaurus thing, is that so there's like two portions of the brain that light up in like a normal brain, right? For
reading.
And there's I don't remember what the three portions are called, but I do remember the one that lights up different. So basically they light up pretty evenly, but in a dyslexic brain, these back two are off. But this one is like five times more active. And that particular one is word articulation and analysis. And that's the reason why using a thesaurus essentially is like, that's part of the system that he created to override it. And what he does is he'll have his students like essentially go through reading this material, and then he'll go, all right, let's find a word that more precisely means what you want it to mean. And so you go through the thesaurus, you write them down. Cool. Good enough, and like you do it over and over again, and using that process he improves both your writing and your reading. And so it's a really cool method.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, it's so funny because I'm pretty smart, but there were certain things in school that I didn't know this was associated with it. I was really good in math, but I could never do word problems. And that's a dyslexic thing. You can't do word problems. Yeah. I used to get so mad. I'm like, just tell me the damn number I need. Like, I was just so frustrated. But also, obviously, I couldn't do spelling was my biggest failure. So the only way to ever pass was I had to do it right before. Like, I never studied. But right before a test, I have to look at all the words. And then I can go through it in my head. And I won't know, like, it won't stay there long, like the spelling of it. But if I can see it, like I can picture things. When people talk, it comes out in images in my head. Like I don't just hear them. I actually see it like a movie in my head. So I don't like really disgusting when they tell me these really bad stories. I'm like, oh, that's pretty bad. but yeah, so I have a pretty vivid mind. And it's so funny because when I come up with these stories, even my coworker is like, where the hell did you come up with that? I was like, I have no idea. And half the time when I'm writing, I don't know where the story is going. I literally just sit down and I write, and I'll write like 6,000 words. And then I'll be like, all right, here you go. I'm like, I didn't read it, so it's good. And I've had fights with whatever personality is in my head that, you know, like I was writing this one. It's only happened once that I can really, truly remember fighting with my character in my head. I was writing a scene, and I believe it's book 5. And she walks into this room. It's completely dark. And these things attached to her, and it's all this stuff is going on. The floor looks weird. I'm writing all this out or typing all this out. I'm like, this does not make any sense. Like this is not going anywhere. I need to start over. And like the characters in my head, like, just freaking keep writing. I was like, I don't know where this is going. So it wound up being an incredibly weird but amazingly unique scene. And my card is like, where the hell did that come from? I was like, I don't know. I don't talk about it. Like, I don't know where it came from. And she's like, I can't wait to see what happens. Like, me too. I don't know what's going to happen. But it was just such a unique thing. I had no idea where it even me describing how the floor was this certain material and how it collects the blood and was doing all this stuff. I was like, I have no idea where any of that came from. That is the only time I remember completely arguing with my character in my head. But normally I'll just sit down and like, everyone's like, oh, what's your you know, writing process? Do you do outlines and do that? And I was like, well, that sounds like what I should do. my process is, and this is even stupider, I don't know if you know, one of the things about dyslexic is they see fake movement for some reason. I don't know how it's connected to the brain. I mean, you know what I mean? I don't know how it's connected to dyslexia, but like if we're writing something, and I didn't know this was, I just thought I had, you know, ADD, but things move that aren't really there. So for some reason, if I turn on the TV and I pause it the entire time I'm writing, it doesn't happen. really weird. But if it's off, I don't have as much concentration.
You know what's funny about that? So ADHD and like dyslexia actually overlap.
I can see that.
And the funny thing is that for me, I actually, the way that I work is I put YouTube on one screen while I work on the other, and then I can work fine. But if I don't do that, I will get distracted by anything else in the room, because it basically is like, as long as something's moving, I know that something's moving. But the second it stops, I'm like.
Yeah. See, I have to have it paused. I can't have movement. And I've had like the video, sometimes the music video going, but it's not as good. I have to have it paused. But I just can't have a TV off. It's just, it makes no sense. But like, it's just, it's really weird how the mind works. I know there's something time related too, which I yelled at my parents for. One, they don't believe dyslexia is real. I'm like, can you just read a book? I'm obsessed with time, and I've always been obsessed with time. And it's a dyslexic thing, apparently, that we're almost always on time automatically. Like, we don't even have to try. And it's true. Like, I'm always there on the dot. No matter if I'm hectic or running around like a nut, I wind up being there on time. But another thing is we're obsessed with how long things will take, which has annoyed my parents to no end. How long is this going to take? Why? What do you have to do? Nothing. I'm just curious how long. I even asked him, how long is the show? It's just one of those things I always ask. And I don't even care what the answer is. Well, I do for the show because I know when to stop rambling. But I generally don't care how long it's going to take. I just need to know how long it's going to take. And then it works. My parents always hated it. What's the difference? How long it's going to take? I just need to know. How long is this going to take? I don't know. I was like, you got to know how long it's going to take. So yeah. So now that was one of the things, like, you need to know time. Like, I have the watch, but I just get things on time. We can also tell distances really well, which freaks out my husband, because I know how long a car is moving and how fast it's going to go. And I can go. And he's like, are you crazy? I was like, what? We had plenty of room. Like, nothing was coming, you know? And he's like, no, you went too soon or too close. I was like, nah, I know. And we're very obsessed with like straightness. Like, if I have frames, they have to be straight. That could just be an OCD thing.
It's OCD.
Yeah, I was going to say, that might be OCD, yeah.
I've had it like in and like at a restaurant where I had to get up and fix a frame that was crooked. And I was
like, I'll also invite you over, and then you can just start fixing stuff.
Well, there was this joke. I don't know if everything in my life can relate to some Simpsons episode. And there's a Simpsons episode where she's trying to find a franchise. And one of them was a picture frame straightening. You get a glove. And you have to like make it straight. I was like, I could do that job. But there was this really cruel restaurant that probably knew I was coming, and they screw it in crooked. So like that's how they do the pictures. They're all crooked, but they screw them in so you can't move them. And I was like, you bastards. So yeah.
It's like, I only knew that because I went up the wall and I ripped it off.
I was like, why don't you pull it right off? Screw this. Yeah. Not carrying a crowbar around. You got to do what you got to do. So yeah. But yeah, I'm filling the information on this dyslexia. That sounds great.
Yeah, so that's awesome. So yeah, so speaking of that, because that's super interesting how fast you've moved in the comic space compared to basically like 99% of people we talk with. And the fact that, you know, you're doing that while also fighting through like dyslexia and apparently OCD and potentially ADHD and, you know, whatever.
There's a lot of stuff. Multiple personalities arguing in my head. Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, CPA, MBA, whatever it is, right? So, but basically, I last question before we go to Nova Nation, I wanted to ask, you know, what advice do you have for aspiring creators? Because there's tons of people out there that, you know, that they made one comic and they're struggling to make the second one. I know it costs money to do, but like sometimes I feel like a lot of creators get in their own way, and literally you're in your own way and you've climbed over yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you figured out how to get past that. Like, what advice?
Shove myself over a cliff to keep going. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So what advice do you have for those creators?
So it's hard to give advice because I've done everything completely wrong. You know, I've written like I have creators yelling at me, like, why'd you write 100 issues? Was it on purpose? I wrote 100 issues. If I was to say anything, is one, for the normal brain, do an outline, but have your ending first. Like, I always wrote my endings first, and then I work my way to them so that I know it's going to be a good ending. And it's kind of, I'll write an ending, and I'll be like, now how do I get to that ending? Like, it's a unique way to kind of, you know, get to each place I want to go. And I'll, I, I did not do my books in order. I came up with an idea and I got my co-writer all excited about it and we would jump to it. Like currently now we have, I've just narrowed it down to two at the same time. We used to have like three or four replies going at once. So when I put all the books together, that's when I was like, we have 11 books. Like I had no idea how much we had because I kept them separately, but I've never put them together as a book and they're all out of order. And it just fits so well when I did it. So I would suggest doing the ending first. If you don't know what your ending is going to be, then you probably shouldn't write it. Like you need to know, like everyone was saying, oh, how do I know it's not like Game of Thrones where it gets worse as it goes? I was like, actually it gets better where it goes because I already wrote it. Like I know how it's going to end. I know what's going to happen. And I'm very proud of how it ended. And so I know what's going to happen. So I would definitely say no, you know, where you're going with the story. Like a lot of people have like, oh, I have a really good idea. And they'll write like one issue, like you said, and like, I don't know where to go with it. You shouldn't have done it until you had at least three so that you can kind of get ahead.
That's a pretty good number too, to like have three in mind. Yeah. Coincidentally, I don't remember. It might've been someone like Timothy Fling or who's the one that has that the sub-universe, Dimitri?
Demetrius,
yeah. I think he might, one of those two, I think might have said it, where basically it's like, it's a what?
Submerge.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's what, yeah. And basically, what's it called? In order to get real fans, you kind of need to get to issue three anyways, because like the first issue, if I'm a potential fan, why would I invest my time in your comic if that's the only one you ever write, right? Like imagine Cowboy Bebop released one episode. Like people love that. It's only one season too, right? Like people love that anime. And it's like, imagine they only released one episode and then you're just stuck there with it. Like it's uncomfortable. Yeah.
My first one was all the first three. When I released my first one, it was all the first three. And it wasn't on purpose, but it worked out that way. And it kind of built where people were like, oh, it's already been done, which is funny because people like knowing that I have the whole series written because they know it's going to get done, whether I have to sell my house or, you know, lose my house to do it. But publishers refused to read my proposal because there was more than three issues. Like they wouldn't even read it. Like I had an editor go through my proposal. And they're like, nope, we won't read it because we only do three issues. And I was kind of rude. I didn't mean to be. Like I said it in the nicest way as possible. And I was like, why do you only do three issues? And they said, because only 65% by two and then half of that by three. And I was like, then you're writing the wrong stories. Like if you can't get them interested in the issue, you're writing it wrong. Like I torture my poor, you know, writers, my poor readers by everything ending on a cliffhanger, like a horrible, horrible cliffhanger. Like book three, they're all going to kill me. Every single one. I mean, in one of them, she gets bit by a zombie in the last page. So like there's just like all these things that happen that they're going to be like, well, what the hell? Which is another reason why I released them quick, because they're like, what the hell happens? I was like, see you in 4 weeks. Like, I don't know. But yeah, I have the story written out. If it's one issue, then write it like that. But I would have at least three issues written out because I don't like to invest in something that I don't know where it's going. Sometimes I don't even watch a show until it ends because I want to know it's going to end the way I want to. And I want to know it's in the right direction that I go to. And I need enough things to watch or binge or whatever. I do have one tip that I didn't learn until I already spent thousands of dollars. If you're trying to get a comic book done and you want to find an artist, for the love of all, do not ask for a character design. Tell them what you want and give them a page of your script. Because all these people would do character designs that I have to explain what it looks like anyway. And then they do a script, you know what I mean? They write a page and it doesn't look right. It looks nothing like the characters. So like after spending thousands, I was like, I'm just going to give them a page of the script, tell them what the character looks like, and they do it. And not only did it work out amazingly, it was half the price as a character design. They do not like doing character designs, but you did one to do the page. So I don't understand the concept.
That right there, do you know what's so funny about that? I've actually, so a lot of artists are afraid of like the AI generated imagery. And to me, it's like, for me, I'm like, too many writers can't afford to hire concept artists. And so they write no story or they don't pay an artist at all. And they just don't do it. And I'm like, artists should be so excited about the AI generated image. You know, I'm going to save some of this for the Nova Nation stuff, but basically it's like that. I think that's a huge missed opportunity, which I, like I said, I'll explain that Nova Nation, like what I think about that. Cause I know that people get mad and I'm going to leave them on a cliffhanger and not tell them all my
thoughts.
There you
go. See? That's going to be my slogan. Leave them on a cliffhanger.
But I definitely agree with the begin, like begin with the end in mind. Like that's like one of the seven habits of highly successful people. Like, you know, it's the idea that you don't want to run towards a direction that you don't know where you're going. Like get a point. And the way I like to say it is like that end in mind is like your true north, and you bring a compass. Don't draw a map because there might be something wrong with your map. But if you got a compass, you can keep getting there. And then that way your story can kind of maneuver how it needs to.
It worked out really well because, like I said, we skipped around. If I thought of a scene and I wanted to do it so badly because I want to see this scene done, we'd skip to it and do it. And then we have to figure out a way to connect it to what I wanted to connect it to. And then we had to think. And that's not easy for us to do. So we had to think, how are we going to get there? And we have to follow the rules. We would not change what we already wrote. So we like to torture ourselves. So we're like, all right, well, we can't do this because we said they did this. So it kind of made you have to figure it out. And then it made it for a better story because we had to challenge ourselves to be like, how am I going to get to this ending? And what do I do? And now, and like, there's certain things in my story. Like, I don't know if you read in issue 3, the fathers come out, the angel and the demon. And for anyone that notices, the characters will never, ever see them because they're not in the novels. They're in series 2. So they can't be seen, or series 2 can't happen because they tricked them in series 2. So I added them because I wanted to, one, show that they're not humans, because they're kind of give a little exposition to kind of get them, you realizing like, wait a minute, why aren't they human, or why are these their dads, you know? So I added them, and it was one of the best ideas I had adding to it. So you have that, and then they have the banter. Like, they have such fun banter going back and forth. Like, my favorite banter in issue 7 is like, he's like, I really hate you. You know that, right? And the guy and the demon's like, it's my favorite thing about you. Like, it's just the little playful things of going back and forth. Of course, the angel's serious. The demon's just a jerk. But yeah. So, but the ending is what created the story, and it worked out really well. And I'm glad I have it done now. I mean, we're still writing, but I'm just glad I have series 1 done, and it completes itself. And if you don't read the epilogue, it's a happy ending. And, you know, there'll be a warning before the epilogue. Do not read if you want a happy ending. Just trust me. But then you read the epilogue and it goes into series 2. So, so that's what I recommend. Have 3, have an ending. And when it comes to comic books, do not ask for character design. There's your 3 tips. The 3 tips that no one will ever listen to me about. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go to Nova Nation, but for people that don't subscribe to that, where can people find you?
I am everywhere Worthy Chaos. Just search everywhere. Twitter is Worthy_Chaos, and we have 5,300 followers.
What's Twitter?
I'm not calling it X. And I have nothing against Elon Musk, but that looks like a porn site now, so. But yeah, I have 5,300 followers on some porn site somewhere. And, I'm pretty sure only 20 people see my same, what does he call it now?
I thought you were about to say, see my porn.
See my porn tweets or whatever the hell you call them.
I don't know. You can see all your
It's not called anymore. It's called something else. I forgot what it was called.
They're just posts now. I think they're just called posts.
I thought it was called something else.
Instead of retweet, it's repost. Yeah.
Whatever. Fine. Whatever. On Facebook, which is still, as far as I know, Facebook. It's called Facebook. There's a
Meta.
Yeah, that's right. Screw all the freaking names. We have a Worthy Chaos group. We have about 700 members in there. I started a couple weeks ago. And on both places we post.
Hey, wait, let's pause that again. You said you just started a couple weeks ago and you got 700 members?
Yeah, I don't know why they accepted my invite, but there they are. I don't even know if they know what they got themselves into.
It's just like...
whatever. I was so surprised. I'm like, why are they saying yes to my invite? But so we have followers, and I keep expecting to go in there and it be completely empty, but no, they're still in there. As an indie creator, you are allowed to post in there. You can post your Kickstarters, your websites, whatever, artists can post their commission pricing and where you could find them and everything. So we're very indie friendly because the community is amazing. Like, I love the whole indie community. And I support and back as many as I can. And we all promote each other. So it's very good. And of course, Kickstarter, if I'm not in pre-launch or live, wait 24 hours, I will probably be. Worthy Chaos on Kickstarter. Do not, for the love of everything, search Redemption. There's like 700. I did not think that through. So Worthy Chaos is the best way to find us. Hopefully everyone follows us on there, and the story even gets better. I'm biased, but has all the more action in it and everything. And three is my absolute favorite. You're not supposed to have favorites, but book three is my absolute favorite. So I will get to issue 24, whether I have to sell my husband in my house. So we'll see how that goes.
In that order.
In that order. Oh, busted. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.